So welcome to this, the last of the formal talks. I think just before 10 o'clock we'll just have like a closing little ceremony with a few more words. But some of you will be staying on longer for some more meditation, those of you fortunate enough. Some of you have been very smart and have managed to book two back-to-back retreats. I don't know how you got away with that. But well done. So you'll be staying over here. And obviously this afternoon and tomorrow will be quite noisy because we'll be setting up for our katina tomorrow. And having our katina tomorrow and then cleaning up the day that afternoon. So there'll be a lot of work and this place will be transformed from this very silent, peaceful place to what would look like a train station or a supermarket, a shopping mall, with all sorts of stuff going on here. I still remember that when I first went to Wat Pa Phong in Thailand, you know, just arriving on the overnight train, and just walking through the entranceway, this was a long time ago, 36 years ago now, and the monks were on arms round, because I just arrived on the train. And there wasn't a sound in that monastery, it was just so silent. And the silence actually grabbed you, and that's the most impressive thing when I first went into a monastery like that. And then some years later, I think the Queen of Thailand visited. And there were soldiers on the walls with machine guns. There was hundreds and thousands of, that's what it looked like. So many people there, and I thought, was this the same monastery which I visited sort of so many years earlier? Because the people had totally transformed it. And it just makes you realize that it's not the place, but the people. People make the place, not the place makes the people. The place helps, but you are the most important. So when you're peaceful and quiet, this place becomes very peaceful and quiet. It's not the bricks, it's not the trees, it's you. And I love to remember that because soon you'll be going back to your busy workplace and you think, oh, it's so busy out there. But really, it's you. You make the busyness. You make it sort of disturbing. Which is why that whenever there is a lot of things to do, try and keep that inner sense of peace and quietness within you. And to do that, you remember just, this is good enough. So you stop complaining. We have so much of a fault-finding mind. And sometimes that when you go, even when you start getting to the airport, you're too early, you're too late, too much of a queue, too crowded, food's not right, aircraft's late. We call that the fault-finding mind. Because no matter how long it takes you to get to the airport, that's just what happens. People are trying their very best. I know that sometimes that when I have been late for an appointment, I've noticed that every traffic light gets red. But when I've got plenty of time, the traffic lights are always green. And you're laughing there because I think you've noticed the same thing. And I notice actually, it's nothing to do with the traffic lights, it's just my perceptions, that's all. It just seems that way, but the truth is totally different. Because you make the world busy, and you give that fault-finding negativity to life. So when you go back, you're travelling along, the traffic light goes red. Wonderful, beautiful. What a wonderful opportunity that is to stop in the journey of your life. I always think the red traffic lights were made by the Buddha, telling you to stop, even though you're in such a hurry and there's so many important things you need to do. You can't go fast. You have to stop. Just like in life, there's many important things that you have to do. They're vital. They're terribly important, but you can't do them. You just have to learn how to stop. and you find they weren't so important after all. The world goes on without you very well. You've been away from your office for about 8 or 9 days. You find the company hasn't gone bankrupt. You find it's actually done quite well when you weren't there. You'll find that because you're not there, it's not the case that your wife has run away with your best friend. It's not the case that your husband has been playing around while you've been away. It's not the case that your children are having these amazing parties and they've wrecked your whole house while you've been here. You find that everything has gone on just normally. You weren't required. You were not necessary. And I love that idea, not being necessary. Because sometimes we think we're so important and we have to do this, we have to do that. Because we think we're so important, we have to do this, we have to do that. That makes us worry so much. It makes us start thinking about so many things which we don't really deserve to think about. You know, because we think we're so important. If we don't think about these things and manage them and look after them from a distance, then it'll all go wrong. How many of you have checked your SMSs and mobiles? Was it really necessary? Has anything really terribly gone wrong? If you hadn't checked your mobile phones or SMSs, would the world be any worse? What I'm doing is getting you off these obsessions with thinking you always have to control things to make things right and always fault finding when they go wrong. Look, it doesn't really matter what happens in life. So you're late. You can always get a plane tomorrow. I will always remember this man who came to see me. And he was a businessman. I think he was Australian. And one event changed his life, like often happens in our existence. It made him turn into a spiritual path. Because he was doing business, you know, in Mumbai, in India. And he booked his taxi from the hotel to go to the airport. Taxi arrived on time, but the taxi driver got lost. And he couldn't find the airport. And there they were going around some back streets and some suburbs or parts of Mumbai. And the taxi driver just was going round and round. And the clock was ticking. And this guy was getting more and more paranoid that he'd miss his aircraft. And you know what it's like, you've got to fly it, you've got to catch it. And he started getting very angry with the taxi driver. The taxi driver, you know what Indians do, they... I don't know how they shake their head, but for sure, you could probably know what I'm talking about. But no matter how angry he got, it didn't actually make the taxi driver find the way. Eventually they found the way to the airport. And as they got to the airport, he was just, you know, praying and hoping the flight was delayed. You know, sometimes they are delayed, so sometimes you catch it. But this time, the flight left on schedule. Because he saw it taking off as he approached the airport. This is the old airport, a long time ago. And he saw the flight take off. It was his flight. And he cursed that taxi driver. He had missed his plane. And as they were watching, he saw the plane plummet to earth. Crashed. With everybody dead. He fell in love with that taxi driver afterwards. You saved my life. Thank you for being stupid. Because I don't know that's what he said, but you can get the idea there. There he thought that he missed his plane, it was the end of the world. If he'd have caught his plane, it would have been the end of the world. And that just showed him just the way that life works. Totally unexpected, out of control. When we get angry that things don't work out the way they're planned, sometimes it's better than we planned. Which is why we learn not to worry. I don't know what you planned for this retreat. I don't know what you wrote down in your book about what you expected to get from this retreat. I still don't know whether you're going to ask Eng Chin for your money back. I tell people, and this is honest, you know, we're Buddhists, so we're very kind. So at any retreat, any talk which you have to pay an entrance fee for, even any book which I write, and if you buy that book and you don't like it, I've told that you can ask for your money back. You can. This retreat, if you don't like it, you can ask for your money back. You won't get it back, but you can ask. So I don't lie. Old marks don't lie. They're just a bit tricky, that's all. So on this retreat, you know, it hasn't worked out the way you expected. It never will. And that's one of the great insights you have coming here. And if that's all you learn, that life is what you never expect, that will give you a lot of peace and freedom. Peace and freedom, why? You'll stop worrying so much. Why are you worrying about things which don't happen? Why are you worrying about things which you can't do anything about anyway? It's a total waste of time. If you can do something about it, then worry about it, but don't worry about it for too long. Worry for a couple of minutes and do something about it. Instead of thinking, oh, I should do this, I should do this, I should do this, I should do this. If you can do it, then do it and stop thinking about it. So, we are people who have very clean, efficient, simple minds. And that's why we get so much more done. We don't waste time worrying about things which we can't do. With something we can do, we make our decisions very quickly and just do it. Many of you during the interviews have just asked me about the decisions which you have to make in life. Should you change your job? Should you get married? Should you get divorced? Should you move countries? Should you... All these decisions which we have to make in life. And we waste so much time worrying about those things. And I've got many decisions to make. I have much responsibility. But I don't worry myself and lose sleep on making decisions. Because I know whichever decision I make, it's all the same anyway. I'll make a decision to sort of go to Singapore to teach a retreat, or I'll teach a retreat here. It's still the same people. What's the point? You know, you make a decision at lunchtime, you know, to eat, you know, the vegetarian food, the fish, the pizza. But look, whatever you eat, it all comes out the same colour. So that's what I mean, whatever decision you make, it always ends up the same. So when I think of that, I think, well, what's the point of worrying about decisions? Just make a decision quickly and do it and forget about it. And that way, instead of worrying about making mistakes, I worry about wasting time thinking, should I, shouldn't I? And you know, that is what the real mistake is. Just procrastinating and worrying and losing sleep. Should I, shouldn't I? Should I, shouldn't I? Should I, shouldn't I? That's much worse than any consequence of whether you choose to go left or choose to go right. So in life, just learn to make decisions. Quickly. This is good enough. Don't think you're going to be absolutely sure, 100% sure, of what you're going to do in life. Sounds like a good idea. Let's give it a try. And you learn that especially when you're meditating. You get this tremendous courage. And it's a courage which comes from letting go of controlling. Because a lot of reasons why people are afraid of making choices, again, is because they're control freaks. They want it to be just right. They want it to make sure they're perfectly correct before they make a decision. That's typical of a control freak. A lot of control freaks say, oh, we'll do this. Yeah, we'll do that. What do you reckon? Okay, that's good enough. Just like the person, as I mentioned in one of the similes, who goes to the coffee shop with their best friend. You let your best friend decide. Okay, I'll do what you're eating. And that way, when you don't decide, but you eat what other people suggest, life is much more interesting. It was always my choice. I'd always eat fish and chips every day. That's bad for my health. And it's also bad for my understanding about life. So every now and again, people suggest something else. Try this. Okay. And sometimes you find something you never tasted before, which is beautiful. You didn't make a choice. It just, you flowed along with life as it happened. And you trusted, not to control, but just to see what happens. And that way, not only was life peaceful, it was also unexpected, and also quite interesting and delightful. Just likewise meditation, when you sit down here, see what happens. You don't control it and decide, I'm going to watch present moment first of all, then I'm going to be silent. Okay, now what's number three? Three, 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 three. Oh yes! I've got to watch my breath and then sustain attention on the breath and go through all the orders. And again, that's a bit of a control freak again. I've got to do this and then do that. And many of you found out meditation doesn't work that way. Sometimes you sit down and you see a nimitta straight away. Or sometimes, you know, you watch the breath and then it disappears. Then you do present moment. Then you do a bit of this and do a bit of that. But that's life, isn't it? You know, we don't always do things in the right order. And that's our life. So make meditation just like life. And make life like your meditation. And that's why when people say, what should I do when I get home? Exactly what you've been doing the last 7 days, 8 days, 9 days. Just let it be. Do your duties. Make peace. In the same way that when some of you were meditating here, you made noise and some people complained. That's what happens in life. Whatever you do, there's always somebody complains. So I give up now. Trying to please everybody, totally impossible. Whatever talk I give, somebody complains. I really put all my energy and effort into telling funny jokes. People complain. So you don't worry about people complaining anymore. You expect it. So complaining is like the noise of people coughing or banging their water bottles or whatever else they do. That's just life. And as we often say, you don't disturb the sound. If you don't disturb the sound doesn't disturb you. So when you go back, don't disturb life. And if you don't disturb life, life doesn't disturb you. And of course you know what I mean. You know, the noises, the groans, the complaints, the things which go wrong, the red traffic lights missing your aircraft, you know, losing your job, getting cancer, dying. Oh, so what? You know, dying is a wonderful thing. That's why I say, you know, get it out of the way so you can enjoy yourself afterwards. Well, look, I mean, do you really want to be old in the old people's homes and stuff like that? So don't be afraid of death. If it comes early, whoopee, I've escaped the nursing home. Yeah. So don't be afraid of anything. So you don't disturb life, but if you have to go to the nursing home, that's just fine. Just allow other people to care for you and enjoy yourself. Because if you know how to meditate and be peaceful and quiet, it's one weird thing, you know, that when I was in Thailand for many years, you saw many old monks. I never saw anyone with dementia. Old monks. I think because, especially the meditating monks, because they were training their mind, they were always being mindful and practicing and not wasting their time worrying and thinking too much. That's why they didn't get dementia. Look at it this way. If you have a car and you keep driving it so hard, you know, gunning the engine, going really fast, stopping very quickly, you know, running it day after day after day like that, how long will your car last? Not that many years. Now imagine the way you use your brain. Worrying, thinking, tensing up, controlling. No wonder your mind, your brain wears out. And that's called dementia. It will out, nothing works anymore. Just like a car which won't start. So, what have you been doing? Thinking and worrying so much, planning and complaining so much. You know the karma which that's going to lead to. You've worn out your brain. You can't think anymore because you've done all your thinking in your middle ages. So much, you've got nothing left in your old age. So keep a bit of silence now, so you keep a bit of energy for later on in life when you really need it. So I have all these amazing theories. I'm sure you'll complain about them because they probably don't make any sense. But it's an interesting idea anyway. But it may explain why it is that people who are mindful, who keep a peaceful life, don't tend to get dementia. So, what you're learning here is learning how to just to pace yourself through life by not worrying so much, not forcing the issue, and not sort of disturbing life, and then life doesn't disturb you. Often I told this story, and it's a great story. There's two Thai ladies. Well, no, they'll probably come tomorrow for the Katina. They're still very sort of devout disciples of this organization. And that was when these two ladies, they came for counseling, you know, as people do. And, you know, I often think, you know, even like you guys in Singapore, why you always want to ask me the questions and why you come to the interviews and why you want counseling about all these aspects of your life, like your boyfriends, your girlfriends, your mistresses, your finances, all these things which I don't know anything about. Because I've been a monk for 36 years. What do I know about sex and relationships? What do I know about finances and money and getting your job? But I often thought, why do you ask me? And one day it clicked. I know why they ask me. Because I'm cheap. I don't give you a bill at the end of the session, do I? Now if you go anywhere else in Singapore or the world for this type of counselling, you know, you'd have to pay at the, you know, the reception afterwards. So that's why people keep bothering me. But anyway, these two girls came to ask for their counselling. And it was typical problems of, you know, women. You know, the elder sister was married, and she was having trouble with her husband. And you know what it's like, you know, when he wanted sex, you didn't. When you wanted it, he didn't. When you wanted to do, you know, when you want, somebody wanted to spend the money on the car, she wanted it on the kitchen. It's just endless, the sort of problems which happen in marriages. And so she'd had enough. She thought she'd married the wrong guy. So she asked me, you know, should I keep trying or should I just give in and just get a divorce? And you know, as a monk, we like to say, well, this is the calm, this is your ingredients, make something out of it, work. I mean, you're already married. You know, you've done all that, so make it work. Do something about it. So that's what we usually do as a monk. Just whatever you have in life, investigate it, work with it. Don't try and get rid of it all the time. You know, see if you can make a beautiful pizza out of just ordinary ingredients. So that's the advice I gave her. And then, of course, I turned to her sister, her younger sister. And what her problem was, she was looking for a partner in life. She was getting to that age, you know, a few more years, and she would have very little hope. Her chances were receding every year of attracting a guy. And I asked her, what's wrong? And she said, no, she goes out to the clubs and she meets guys and they date. But she said, about a month, and that's all that happens. And then something happens, they always split up. She said, this happens again and again and again. What's wrong with me? Or what's wrong with these guys? You know, how can I find a partner in life? Someone to share my life with. You know, someone to talk with at night, you know, when everyone else is gone. Someone to be intimate, someone to get to know him and for him to get to know me. Where can I find that guy? And so she was asking about that. And of course, some of you have heard this story before, but I got this amazing insight. Because that's what monks do, you listen. And you get these great understandings. So my insight, you know, because it was actually quite obvious. I couldn't understand why they didn't think of it themselves, you know. Your elder sister's got a husband she doesn't want. You want a husband. Your sister's share. Well, what's wrong with that? Of course, I don't know why, but they didn't agree to do it. For the older sister give her husband to the younger sister. But that was afterwards when I told them serious business, serious insights. That when you have a husband, I told the older sister, it's always like that. You've got what we call husband dukkha, husband suffering. So all you women have got a husband. You know that, you can recognise that. That's what it's like to have a husband. It's called a certain type of suffering, which we call like husband pain. And I said, if you get rid of your husband, you know, get divorced, get separated, or move to another country, you don't have that husband suffering anymore. You have what your sister has, you know, single woman suffering. So whatever you do, you don't escape, it's just suffering. And so then they said, well, maybe we should ordain, renounce, become nuns. I said, yeah, it's true. If you become nuns, you don't have husband suffering, you don't have single woman suffering, you have nuns suffering. And just ask, you know, the young monk over here, he's got novice suffering. I've got abbot suffering. It's really hard being abbot, you know. Yes, I just had to go and give a talk last night at Nolamara, and as soon as I came in the door, all these people, they swamped me, asking this question and that question. I hadn't even been to the toilet yet. I was dying to go. They said, no, just 1 minute, Ajahn Brahm. Even just coming in here, someone said, can we take a photograph, Ajahn Brahm? Look, there's people waiting for me to give a talk afterwards. So what I actually did, this was last night, I said, number one, number two, number three, number four, I'm giving you tickets. Please wait in line. So that's abbot suffering. But if I resign and become a hermit, I'll have hermit suffering. That's how, yeah. So you know that. So now you're on retreat. For the last 9 days you've had retreat suffering. You know what that's like. You know, Ajahn Brahm teaches about jhana, and I don't even get an image. I don't even watch a breath before my mind goes to sleep. That's called retreat suffering. Retreat suffering. There's only another hour to go. I better do something quick. Retreat suffering. So it doesn't matter. Tomorrow you will not have retreat suffering anymore. You'll have going to work suffering, being in the office suffering, house cleaning suffering, cooking the dinner suffering. It's all waiting for you. Welcome to life. So wait to understand that. This is what we understand in the meditation retreat. We understand what life is. And no longer does life disturb us, because we don't disturb life. It's called letting go. So the whole purpose of this retreat, getting your mind peaceful, you know, having some joy, getting lights and nimittas and all that sort of stuff, that's not the real purpose, is it? The real purpose of the retreat is just learning how to let things be. Learning how to let go. To flow with things. And stop trying to control. Stop expecting. If you don't expect anything, you will never be disappointed. If you don't control, you never find frustration. And that way, you're a very peaceful being. And said, someone says, do you get jhana? Who cares? Do you get enlightened? Who cares? So the main reason we're here is to develop peace. To develop this beautiful sense of detachment. Of freedom. And we know that's happened because of the great happiness which comes. And it's not the happiness just because you're on retreat. If you really develop the meditation happiness as a real happiness, born of letting go, born of just being at peace with things, that same happiness will be with you at work. You'll be running around, but this time with a smile on your face. Simple thing. I remember when I was at university, the first year, everyone was trying to get you to join their clubs. And just for about 6 months, because this particular club, it was the boat club in Emmanuel, you know, the ones who go on the river rowing, and they were offering this free sherry if you just go to their sort of reception. I must have drank too much sherry because I signed my name up. So you had to learn how to row these boats. And it's really hard work, you know, just rowing in these races. But I remember this one day, and it was probably worth it for the 6 months I was doing this. It was worth it because of this one thing which I learnt. It's an obvious piece of advice. But you're rowing in this race, and it was very tough, and it was, you know, neck and neck, and so we were really going for it. And you just, you get so much pain in your muscles because you're really pushing yourself to the limit and beyond the limit. And that was where the coach, he's on the bicycle on the towpath with a little megaphone, and he shouted out at me, saying that, you know, you're grimacing, you're clenching your teeth, you're making a really angry face. He said, smile. And of course that's well known in sport, in any endeavour. But the thing was, I had enough faith, I was malleable, I was willing to try things out, so I smiled. And that awe immediately became so much easier to pull. And it was fantastic to realise. It makes the awe much heavier and harder to pull. But when you smile, you got more energy, everything is lighter and easier. And it's the joy which you put into life makes life easier. Because grimacing means I was just resisting, I was controlling, I was just adding to the suffering. When I smiled, much of the suffering vanished. So that's what happens to you in life. If your plane is delayed, grimacing makes it far worse. Smiling when you've missed your plane. Ah, oh, I have just missed my plane. Ah, oh, I just got the sack for work. Ah, oh, my wife has just left me. That actually may make you smile. But what you'll learn there is life is so much easier. Exactly in your meditation, I hope. I did mention that little technique. You may have missed it, but you're meditating there, and it's peaceful, but nothing much is happening. It's a bit dull. Take away your attention from the breath or whatever, and put it on your mouth. And if you can't manage a natural smile, fake it. Just push. Because here, now isn't it life easier when you're smiling and happier? In many of these long meditations you've been having here, sometimes, you know, at the end of the day you've had it, and I'm sure that sometimes you think, I can't take this any longer, I have to leave. And I come along and tell some jokes and you just want to carry on. Because the happiness takes away so much pain, so much negativity. And I do that obviously for a reason. And it's a reason is to show you that happiness makes life so much more easy, including meditation. So when you're meditating, develop happiness. Because I've known this for a long time, in all the meditation techniques which I have taught and developed over my life, I've always been very playful and innovative, and you be the same. Many, many years ago, I invented, because I do R&D in meditation, I invented the backwards breath meditation. And I haven't read in any sutta, commentary of any tradition, anyone before me who invented backward breath meditation. So this is an original Ajahn Brahm type of meditation. And it's very simple to do. And I thought I would teach you the backwards breath meditation. So, I'm going to teach you this now. So, I want you to cooperate. Close your eyes. Stay sitting as you are, very quickly. And just breathe in and out 3 times. And at the end of the 3rd breath, open your eyes. Just 3 times. In, out, in, out, in, out. And then open your eyes. Okay, now for those of you who haven't heard this before, you'd have started with the in-breath, then out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. Everybody does it that way. Now we're going to do backwards breath meditation. Close your eyes and breathe out first. Out-in, out in, out in. And after the third in-breath, open your eyes. So it's beginning with the out-breath. Now you will notice that it's totally different. A very different experience. Breathing in, out, in, out, in, out. It's not the same as when you breathe out first and then in. And I call that the backwards breath meditation. Always breathing out first and then breathing in. It's actually, it shouldn't be the same, but it is. And because it's different, it makes it a little bit more interesting. So if you're doing the breath meditation, every now and again, do a backwards breath meditation. Okay? Breathe out first. And if that doesn't work, there's a development of that, which is the three in-breaths for the one out-breath. It makes me laugh too. So any depression I have, any boredom, anything, how long do I have to do this for? It just disappears as I mess around and have fun. And just like laughing when you're putting on oar, it makes the meditation much easier. It's much easier to concentrate and pay attention when you're enjoying it. So the one thing which I teach, which I think you understand by now, is I put a lot of joy and happiness, whatever I have to do in life, especially my meditation. Because I put joy in there. I develop joy. I cultivate joy. You know what happens? You have a lot of joy. You made it. You cultivate it. You look for it. You developed it. And there's joy for you. Don't you want to be joyful? Hands up if you want to be happy. It's a silly question, isn't it? Hands up if you want to be miserable. Come on, just play around and say, yeah, I want to be miserable. Usually there's some joke always puts their hand up and makes me laugh. We all want to be happy, so this is a great way of being happy. So you'll find that as you develop your meditation, it's not just what you do in this retreat, it changes a lot of your attitudes in life. You go back and you've got to do these terrible things. You know, you've got someone at work and you've got to sack them. You have fun. See how you can have fun sacking the person. I don't know, you can actually go and say to them, he said, I've got some good news for you. You don't have to come to work tomorrow morning. I don't know. You can make it up. But anyway, whatever you have to do, you can always find some way of putting a bit of joy and fun into life. And if you do, actually I saw this on the TV, oh not on the newspaper. That one of the airlines, I think Philippines Airlines, you know, any aircraft, you know, it drives me crazy sometimes when they do all of these, what's it called, the safety demonstrations. You know, you've seen it so many times, and they always say the stupid things, you know, you're supposed to do. You know, as if you were some moron idiot with IQ of about 50. Actually, that reminds me of a joke about IQ. And this was, I can tell this because I'm an Australian. Because this is called self-deprecating humour. There was this Singaporean, you know, and they migrated to Perth. And the kid went to school, you know, young kid. And had the lesson on IQ. At least he heard about IQ. So when he went home, he asked his father, you know, for some more information. What is IQ? And his father told him, he said, look, IQ is a measure of your intelligence, you know, how clever you are. If you've got an IQ of about 120, you know, you do really well in life. You get some good results. 140, 160, you probably go to university. And 180, you're a genius. You know, most of us have got the average of 100. That's the average IQ. 80, you're going to struggle in life. You know, IQ about 60, you'll probably be so stupid you won't be able to even tie up your own shoelaces. And a young kid from Singapore, oh, is that why Australians wear these thongs? It's true, we do all wear these thongs with those shoelaces. So there must be a reason behind it. And I can say that because I've got Aussie passport. Self-deprecating humour, which is wonderful. I've got you laughing now. So actually, that when we learn about all these things in life, just about, you know, what is intelligence anyway? Intelligence is what makes you go through life peaceful and happy. Now, what do you want your degrees for? What do you want your money for? What is the purpose of money and wealth if it's not to be peaceful and happy and content in life? So what you realise here, getting the jhanas or the nimittas, that's not the main reason you're here. No more than getting the money or the big house is the reason you're alive. You're here for peace, for happiness, for contentment. And for this beautiful sense of selfless fun. Not sort of fun which exploits another person or laughs at another person. This beautiful fun which enjoys the moment, values the moment, lives in the moment, and realizes, what more do you need in life? So when I say this is good enough, what that means is contentment is the highest happiness. So it doesn't matter how much you have. Yeah, you work hard, but not for the sake of money, for the sake of fun. So enjoy your work. Money is a secondary thing. Yeah, you've got to have money to pay the bills. But what's most important is the fun and joy you have in life. Yeah, getting jhanas is great. What's more important is the fun and joy you have on the way to getting jhana. The peace in the moment, the contentment. This idea that, yeah, this is good enough. You get jhana, it's just a bonus. But right now, this peace and happiness, that is what it's all about. And where does that peace and happiness come from? Just living simply, not being proud and demanding in nature, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in your ways, as I've been brainwashing you twice a day. That's why we chant. Of course it's hypnosis, of course it's brainwashing, of course it's conditioning. You hear these words again and again and again, and they get inside you, remember it, and actually once you remember it, you become it. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, who knows the path of peace. So, we've been teaching the path of peace in this chant, which you've been doing early in the morning and late at night. We do it early in the morning and late at night, because any psychologist knows when the mind is not fully awake, when it's a little bit dull and sleepy, that's the best time for hypnosis. When your guard is down, when you're not fully aware of what I'm up to. So it works. So you do become peaceful and kind, and you realize that's the whole purpose of this retreat. So of course you're going to ask yourself and you're going to tell your friends, so what did you learn in this retreat? What did you get out of spending all this money on aircraft, on, you know, the fees to Eng Chin, and taking time off and flying sometimes halfway around the world? What did you get from this? Yes, nothing but beautiful nothing. Wonderful nothing. Delightful nothing. So this is nothing. Nothing is better than this. And you got what is better. Sometimes people say that nothing is higher than God. That's why Buddhism is much more superior than God. It's nothing. Nothing is higher than God, so it must be superior. So exactly, that's what you've got. What you achieved, what you got is something which is much higher than God. Yeah, nothing is better than your wife. Is that so? So you got that. So what we have is the happiness, the peace, the bliss, the joy. And what did you have to do to get that peace and happiness and joy? Now, did you have to take drugs or alcohol? Did you have to win a lottery and be filthy rich? Did you have to have a huge house? Did you have to have a big car? Did you have to be famous and have your name in the front cover of the glossy magazines? You didn't need any of that. You're just coming and enjoying the moment, being at peace with this moment, just being in love with the now. That's all one needs. Open the door of your heart to this moment. Whatever's happening now, it's good enough. And you start good enough. And it becomes, actually, it's not just good enough. This moment is actually quite nice. Actually, it's more than quite nice. It's brilliant. Actually, it's not brilliant. It's amazing. It's not just amazing. It's blissful. It's not just blissful. It's ecstatic. Good enough is that this little seed which you plant in the ground of the present moment, and it just grows and grows into this beautiful Bodhi tree. Huge, strong, with so many leaves, giving so much shade and inspiration to so many people. So hopefully you've planted the seed of good enough. And good enough will grow all the way through these stages of joy, to bliss, to ecstasy, to total freedom. Yeah, it's not just good enough. That's just a seed. See what happens later on as that seed begins to grow. Contentment, peace, happiness, joy, bliss, ecstasy. The whole works. And you know, it's, yeah, even though we say no achievements and attainments, but you know what it's like. Many of you have been meditating a long time now. Some of you just started, and things do happen. It's weird, because you don't make it happen. It just happens. And the tree grows, and you start, things start to happen. You do start to get peaceful. You do sit down and, my goodness, that's an hour and a half gone past. I can't sit more than 20 minutes. Something wrong with the clock. You check all the clocks, there's not that many in this joint, and you find actually it was an hour and a half. You're sitting there and these beautiful lights come up and say, it must be the sun shining through the window, until you realize Ajahn Brahm was smart. He didn't put any windows in this hall, so it can't be the light shining through. You realize, my goodness, it was an imitator. And you keep on practicing and you bliss out. And you think, my goodness, that happened to me. I got this ecstasy. You start getting jhanas. And my goodness, that's when you really start to buzz. I realized when I started looking at the books that when you experience a jhana, you experience what it was like to be a Buddha. Your mind and the Buddha's mind are no different. In the Chula Hatipadopama Sutta, the shorter discourse on the elephant's footprint, that's what the Buddha said. He said, this is a footprint of the Buddha. And now you're standing, literally, where the Buddha stood. You're literally in his shoes, or rather in his sandals. That's what it's like. When those things start to happen, ooh, that is freaky. That's amazing, when you realize what you're up to. So you start getting peaceful, you start getting happy, and it gets into all this amazing stuff. And all these things you read in the books, all these things which you thought, well, yeah, great monks or great nuns sitting in caves in the Himalayas, maybe they can get those things. But now, you are experiencing them too. And you realize, this path has nothing to do with how educated you are, how ill-educated. It has nothing to do with your gender, whether you're a man or a woman. It has nothing to do with your race, whether you're African, Chinese, Caucasian, Indian. It has nothing to do with your age, whether you're young or old. It has nothing to do with anything like that. You too are walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. This is not a theory anymore. This is your personal experience. When you realize you've got that far, you realize there's not that far to go. Ooh, it's happening. And it's wonderful when these things happen to you. Because most of you think, well, maybe for others, but not me. But you keep on this path. You stick with the Buddhist Fellowship. And see what's happening. It does work. And that's why I enjoy being a teacher. Well, I've been a teacher for such a long time now. Seeing that people are hopeless meditators. People who first came and they couldn't sit still for 5 minutes. People who always argue at every point of the way. People who would always sneak into the kitchen at night time. And once they got out of sneaking in the kitchen, it was all the stuff they bring in their suitcases to the retreat which they could either nibble or cook in their rooms. And they all thought that I didn't know. No, I know. And all those scallywags, you know, turn into meditators. And peaceful and beautiful meditators, and see them all grow, just like, you know, when you have kids. You see this little kid come out of your belly, and you don't know what they're going to do. You see them grow up, and you see them go through all the stages. You see them go to school. You see them sort of leave their university. You see them get married, start a family. So through all the little stages, and you realize, just because a kid comes out the room, he doesn't think, you know, maybe I'm going to grow up, maybe I'm not going to grow up. You do grow up. It just happens. And just the same with your meditation. It is a natural course. It's just what happens. And the great thing is, later on you found, it didn't really depend upon you, on your effort, on your striving or not striving. We always think that we're in total control, especially by meditation practice. You're not. It happens, it doesn't happen, totally independent of you. I compared it to the monks as saying that it's like, you know, you go on the aircraft, because you all go on an aircraft the next couple of days, most of you anyway. You go on an aircraft, and you think, my goodness, I'm in a rush, so I have to sit in the front of the aircraft. Thinking if you sit in the front of the aircraft, you'll get there sooner. And you look about all these lazy bums in the back of the aircraft, who are never doing anything, they're just sitting in the back, being lazy. But everyone gets to the destination at the same time. I've been on some of these aircraft, and it's been great fun. Because all these people, you know, especially the ones where you don't book your seats, you know, you just first come, first serve, they always grab the front seats. And I remember going on one of these aircraft, and I got a seat right at the back. And when we landed, they disembarked from the rear exit. Yeah! That was really good fun. People were really upset and said, nah, 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 nah. I must admit, I do enjoy things like that. And that's what it's like in meditation too. All you people who strive, you say, I'm going to get up 4 o'clock. Not 4 o'clock, I'm going to get 3:30. I'm going to be the first in this room every day. I'm going to be the last out. All these other people, they go to bed at 9:30, they'll never get enlightened. You stay till 10:30, 11 o'clock. You know, I remember doing that when I was a lay meditator. You know, I determined to be the last one out of the room, and I'd be meditating there, you know, 10 o'clock, open my eyes. Damn it, they're still there. If you're laughing, it means you've done that. You know, 10:15, what, can't they go yet? And then you find you've done all that sitting. And then you get absolutely nowhere. And these Jojos, they come and they just fall asleep. And just, they have just one good meditation and come totally enlightened. Right, really unfair. I put all this effort in, I struggled, I've done so much. And the other people get enlightened before me. Not fair, no fair, no fair. And a lot of times it is, because it's not coming from a sense of self. This is one of the great teachings I've emphasized this retreat. Effort, striving, where's that coming from? Who's doing the striving? Why are you striving? What are you trying to prove? And you investigate that, you realize why. That path just leads to a bigger ego, a bigger sense of self. Goes against what we're trying to go towards. This beautiful sense of disappearance. Nothing. So as we let go, it's weird, it's strange. We're out of control, we don't control at all. We don't want, we don't crave. And everything we ever wanted comes to us. And I'm going to finish off with another one of my famous similes. It's one of, again, an original Ajahn Brahm. And it's a beautiful one, which just sums up this whole morning's talk and the whole way of this retreat. The great story of the donkey and the carrot. For some of you, golden oldies. Because I've seen donkeys pulling carts. And I've seen people trying to hit that donkey with a stick to make it go faster. Or even just to start pulling the cart. But donkeys are stubborn. That's why we even have the phrase in English, as stubborn as a donkey. Doesn't matter how hard you hit them, they will not move. So people had to be clever and outsmart the donkey to make a donkey move. So they do get a stick, but they don't hit the donkey with it. They tie the stick to the donkey's back. So the front of the stick is about 2 foot in front of the donkey's head. They tie a string to the end of the stick, and on the end of the stick, a nice juicy carrot. If that was a Singaporean donkey, they put a durian on the end of the stick. So there's a Singaporean donkey with this beautiful piece of durian on the end of the string. And of course, craving, desire, wanting, the donkey moves towards that durian. And as it moves towards it, the stick moves, the string moves, and so the durian moves. And doesn't matter how fast that donkey moves, the durian is always 2 foot in front of the donkey. And that is your life. Happiness, joy, contentment, fulfillment. You can see it, it's right in front of you. But it's just too far ahead, you can't eat it, you move towards it and it moves away from you. Fulfillment, love, peace, financial security, everything in life. So close, when we move towards it, it moves away from us. And even like peace, meditation, enlightenment. You've got close many times. Sometimes everything has been going right, you think, this is it, I can get it. And you move towards it, and the nimitta moves away. Just like the durian or the carrot. But one of the donkeys came on one of my retreats once. And they learned how to catch the durian. And this is how, if ever you get reborn as a donkey, which is quite likely for some of you. Well, you've been very stubborn. Come and admit it. And anyway, one of those donkeys. What the donkey does, like most of you already done, they run like hell after that durian, thinking that they can outpace the durian in front of them. But of course, however fast they go, the durian always goes at the same speed, about 2 feet in front of them. You've already been doing that before you came here. But then, the donkey learns how to stop. Stop running. Just let go. Don't do anything. Don't strive. Don't run. Don't chase anything. You know what happens? As soon as the donkey stops, the string of the durian starts going further and further away from you. Just when I told you to let go, those who've been meditating before, let go, you fall asleep. Sloth and torpor, I'm not supposed to have sloth and torpor. Sleep! Have sloth and torpor. I'm thinking, if I don't try and control my mind, I'll think all over the place. That's the durian going further away. Let it go further away, let it be. Because then, something amazing happens. The durian goes further away than it's ever been before. You get more restless, more dull, more crazy than you've ever been before. And then, the durian starts swinging back towards you. And that's the first time you're doing absolutely nothing at all, you're just standing there. And you're watching meditation come close to you. You're not doing anything. It just comes to you. And soon that durian is at its normal position, 2 foot in front of your mouth. Like it normally is. But this time, it's coming at great speed towards you. And you're not doing anything, you're just sitting there, just watching, being still. Beautiful breath, nimittas, jhanas, it'll come. And soon, that durian is swinging past its midpoint, right in front of your mouth. And you just remember that last piece of advice. The door of my mouth is open to you. Just with loving kindness, let it come in. And then you've caught the durian. And that is exactly how enlightenment meditation experiences work. You strive and struggle, and it's always in front of you, but never close to you. You let go, you stop, and at first it goes further away, but then it starts coming towards you. It is still there, just still, watch, doing absolutely nothing. Nimittas, jhanas, one by two, three, four, all come to you, and finally, nibbana. Thank you so much. Very good. Okay, so those who are going to waste time with interviews, I'll be out in the... Those of you who are going to meditate and get this last... How is it? Ancient 30 minutes, 40 minutes? Should we come back at 10 o'clock or when? 9:45. So there's 41 minutes. That's 246 seconds. Is that right? Yeah. Somewhere like that. 410. No, 2,460 seconds. 2,460 seconds, and any one of those could be your time. So you just sit there, stop, and watch all that you're striving for go further away from you. Hopefully it will stop, and then start coming towards you. But you've got to stop, and don't move. Don't chase the Julian. Okay.